Welcome to the Faith Church Peshtigo podcast. You can connect with us online at faithpeshtigo.com. We're also on Facebook. Just search for Faith Church Peshtigo. Today's podcast features a conversation between Pastor Jay and Pastor Robbie talking about the sermon from November 15th, 2020.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church podcast. I am your host, Jay, and joining me is our dear friend, Robbie.
Oh, that's a very kind introduction.
Yeah, I'm trying to be kind.
I affirm that. That sounds like an excellent idea.
Yeah. So is it kind if you're trying? How do you try to be kind?
Sure. I mean, I feel like you always have to try to some degree try to be kind, right?
I suppose, yeah. If you're thinking of try like through gritted teeth.
Right.
That's not the same thing.
Like making an additional effort to say something encouraging. That's legit.
Like an intentionality, if you will. Yeah.
I'll accept that.
Good. So here we are, episode whatever.
Something in the 40s, 48.
I'm something in the 40s.
49. Yeah. Me too.
Hey, do you ever look up, do you ever see an actor or actress and look up their age, just wondering how old they are, and then it makes you sad?
You're horrified to find out that they're 15 years younger than you? Yes.
Oh, 15 years younger. I was thinking like 15 years older.
Oh, no, that doesn't make me sad.
Okay.
It makes me sad when I'm like, oh, man, who's that? Who's that guy who's obviously older and more mature than me? And then you look it up and you're like, wait, he's 28?
Dude, I feel that way.
Crying out loud.
I feel that way right now about, you know, authors and speakers and everything where I'm going, oh, yeah, that's such sage wisdom. And then you look up like they're 34. Oh, man.
That's good. That should be encouraging.
It
though,
is.
Right?
I mean, it's encouraging.
For the future of the church.
Yeah. But you're also thinking, what have I done with my life? What was the thing with Calvin? That's always the thing with Calvin.
How right? So?
Well, just that when he wrote the Institutes.
Yeah.
How old was he? You know these things.
That I don't know.
Oh, man. Look it up right now. He, look at me bossing you around. This is what it's like day to day in the office.
That was unkind.
Yeah. Look it up. No, it's just, I'm confident in your web Googlings. The thing is the stories about Calvin get shared and all it does is just shame everyone that's listening because, you know, he basically uttered his first word and then wrote the Institutes.
he was 27 years old.
27 years old.
27 years old.
Yes. Yeah. I don't even want to say where I was at 27 years old and my ability to string sentences together that were helpful to anyone.
If you don't know what the Institutes are, it's like 1,600 pages of theological brilliance.
Yeah.
Like whether you agree with all of his conclusions or not, it's brilliant and incredibly well argued, well constructed, well written, and he was 27 years old.
Yeah, 27 years old. That's one of my favorite Calvin stories.
I just learned this morning that Teddy Roosevelt was 21 when he published his first book. That became like required reading of every person in the Navy for decades.
Really?
21. Hadn't even graduated college yet. And
dude, when I was 21, I'd barely read a book.
I don't think I had completed my first book cover to cover at 21.
I may not have either. Wow. 21 years old. That's pretty impressive. So those are the kinds of things that when I read that, I'm like, wow, that's really impressive. Wow, what is my life?
How many books have I written again?
Yeah.
Drats. I got to catch up.
I definitely. So there you go. That's encouraging. I also love my other favorite Calvin story is how he preached at the church. They ran him out of town. He was in exile for however long. Yeah. How long was it that he
decades,
was gone?
Decades, wasn't it? Wasn't it like 10 years or 15
something,
years?
Something like that. Yeah. Then he returns. They begged him to return. He returns to the church. And now years and years later, after being run out of town, his very first sermon is the next sermon in the series that he had been preaching years before.
Picked up right where he left off.
Literally just got him like, all right, we'll turn to...
As I was saying.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been turned to because they didn't probably all weren't all carrying their personal Bibles. But the as I was saying. So, yeah. I don't know if that's fitting right now. Is that a transition into?
I think it is into preaching. Yeah. Yes. So Sunday, I was super encouraged by Sunday. I always take a lot of notes on Sundays, and I feel like I took extra copious notes this last Sunday. I thought, so great job. I was really encouraged by that. I have a couple questions, or maybe just some opportunities for you to expand on some ideas, but I wanted to start by asking if there was anything that you had that you wish you had a little bit more time to unpack, or a couple days afterwards thinking about it, wish you had, you know, could communicate differently or expand on.
No. I mean, there are always nope. Random things. Anything that I think is helpful? No, not really. I do wish, I always wish, and I think you actually have some questions. I have a feeling this is where this is headed, but of illustrations. Like, illustrations are so hard. They're so application, illustrations of application. There you go. There's the phrase.
Yeah.
Are so difficult because you're trying with a very broad-ranging audience to hit things that are common enough that we would all share, or at least be able to apply then to more specific situations. And so I always leave those thinking like, man, did I do enough? Did I do too many? Did I choose the right ones? You know, anything like that. So, but no, not, I mean, there wasn't anything glaring.
I actually am encouraged by that, because I mean, if the few times that we can walk away from a Sunday and feel like, all right, I feel like I communicated what I was supposed to communicate, and in a way that generally I'm happy about, that is a rare gem. And so I hope you're encouraged by that.
I didn't say it was good. I just said that I didn't have anything better. That's where I am with it.
I suppose technically that is what you said, but I'm gonna put the positive spin on that, if I may.
Look at you.
I'm gonna try to be kind.
You're being kind.
Thanks. Okay, so questions then.
Yeah.
I'll take the wheel here. I wrote down and loved your point, loved in the way that you love something that is both challenging and encouraging in that disciplinary sort of way. I loved when you said we pray that God would change us, but then spend even more time praying that God would remove the circumstances that would actually produce that change in us. I think it's absolutely the case. I think anyone would say that rings true, that they can think of examples of, you know, you pray for patience, you know, God, please give me patience. And then when difficult circumstances arise that he wants to use to produce, to teach us how to be patient in those difficult circumstances, we freak out and ask him to remove those as soon as possible. How can you unpack that a little bit more? Like, how, in what ways do you see, other ways do you see that fleshing out? Or do you have some encouragement of how do we respond when we notice that we're doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is so real in my life. I think about things, I think it was Paul Tripp in his book, is it Gospel Parenting or something? It has Gospel and Parenting in the title. Great book. And he talks about as parents, how often we act surprised that our kids need parenting. Mm. And so we want to be their parents. Like, so I think about with my kids, I want to have lots of opportunities to declare the good news of Jesus with my kids. But then I function as though I want them to be perfect human beings who never need the gospel of Jesus Christ. So that's an example. Like another example where I find myself often like expecting and wanting my life to function like we've already arrived. But knowing that we haven't, and knowing that I haven't, knowing that God has placed me here for a reason, and then being frustrated about it, in a way that then lends to me not doing the thing that I'm called to do. So parenting is an example. And I think, I guess here's what I'd say is, any situation, like you're just saying, okay, what is actually what's the point? And that was the point I was trying to make in the sermon, was in every circumstance, preparing yourself in such a way that you realize like whatever the circumstances are, whatever the situation is, my calling is still the same.
Yeah.
To love God with my whole heart, soul, and mind in this moment and to love my neighbor as myself and to declare and demonstrate the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. So I would say, you know, whether you're, whatever situation you find yourself in, that should be the mindset. And if that's the mindset, well, then we're not always caught off guard so much by things not going well, because those are the best circumstances to demonstrate all those other things. So that really that felt not helpful.
It felt not helpful. Why did that feel unhelpful?
I don't know. My brain is just like going in all these different directions. I mentioned that, like, it's not that we're asking for bad things to happen. It's not that we're asking for bad things in the world to happen or bad things in our lives to happen. I think the big thing is to just don't be surprised. I mean, Peter clearly states that. Do not be surprised at the fiery trials that are among you, as something strange were happening to you. Like, this is actually the normal. And so I think the issue that we run into as Christians, here, I'll say this. I think the issue we run into as Christians is not, it's not the grief that we have over those hard circumstances. It's the tantrum that we throw.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I'm all for, like, if when things don't go the way my kids are hoping for, grieving over a lost opportunity, or, you know, especially right now with things being canceled all the time, it's totally fine and understandable for them to grieve the loss of, say, an activity they were looking forward to. But then throwing a tantrum about that and letting that affect how they function around everybody else, that's the way we'd say, well, that's not okay.
Hmm.
And so yeah. I look at that in our lives and say, okay, let's say an illness strikes my family. Grief is a totally, that's a good response. That is an understandable response. That is not a sinful response at all to grieve over the circumstances that you find yourself in. But then the tantrum or the kicking against the goads or fighting against that, the refusal to accept the place that God has put you, that's where we end up having problems, because then we find ourselves not just grieving over the loss of this good thing, but fighting to keep this thing against God's will.
Hmm.
And once you do that, like, if I'm in a place where I'm fighting fighting to hold on to this temporary blessing that God had given me, and to hold on to that as the thing, well, that's idolatry, and it's going to lead to Christless behavior.
Hmm. Hmm. It reminds me of the New Testament reference to kicking against the goads.
Yes.
That idea of I'm fighting against the very thing that God is using to prod me forward, to move me towards the very ends that he has for me and I would profess that I want, but the means of getting there, the journey, the path is frustrating and I love and hate the term tantrum.
Like, right,
I hate it because I'm like, hey, I'm not throwing. Well, I kind of am. Like, if I'm being honest, that really is. I'm not responding in patience, in gentleness, in quiet. I'm responding in frustration and anger and then I lash out in impatience and all of those things. Like, that is what we define as a tantrum. And I do think, I'm glad that you made that distinction. I think it's important to acknowledge that we would never counsel someone that it is wrong for you to grieve difficult or painful circumstances. However, that does not excuse my treating you with unkindness or contempt or acting in a divisive way in response to that. That's when it stops being about the circumstance and starts being about my sinful attitude towards it.
Right. So if you take the example of the workplace, I think a lot of people, I talk a lot of times to people who have a difficult work environment and they really struggle in that. And it's understandable. And it's the grief over either the sin or the dysfunction or the brokenness, just grief over the the fractured nature of creation at this point.
Legitimately grievous things.
Yeah, yeah, right. Grieving over that is so legitimate. It's demonstrating that you understand this isn't the way it was created to be, but that because of our brokenness, because of our sin, this is what's going on. But if you think about that really practically at work, grief looks like one thing, but then the tantrum would be just the refusal to accept that this is the situation. And then if that affects, so now let's say, I'm trying to think of an example at work. Robbie, let's say, imagine you have an overbearing boss who just in the office, who's just demanding things of you.
Okay. I can go there. I think I can imagine.
It's going to be a stretch. So someone that just barks at you, maybe to like research things on the spot, like things like that. If like to grieve over that is good, but then to the tantrum in that could look like, bitterness and resentfulness and, you know, lashing back or judging in your heart or, just inability to love the person. Like I've had, you know, definitely we talk to people and I struggle sometimes with like, how do I love this person who has treated me so unfairly? Well, that's all happening because of that breeding of that bitterness and resentment in your heart. Mm. I mean, you look at the book of Job, and that's a perfect example of that growing resentment and bitterness, the difference between grief and then, you know, the equivalent of a spiritual tantrum. Yeah. Hmm. You give too much pause. You're supposed to, like, cut me off and just go.
No, you're saying good stuff. I don't want to cut it off and miss something good at the tail end of that. Yeah. I think work is a great example because one of the other things that we were talking about this morning and what you mentioned on Sunday is that idea of approaching mundane activities with a completely different mindset, with that heavenly mindset. And you gave the example of walking into a grocery store thinking, how can I glorify God? How can I love God and love others as I complete this mundane task? What does that look like walking into work? And in particular, when you have a difficult situation like that, when you have grievous circumstances, how do you walk in a very practical, tangible way? How do I walk into that environment that I know is going to be difficult, that I know I'm going to be overtly sinned against in this environment? How do I approach that with the mentality of, okay, these are ways that I can glorify God today in this. These are ways that I can love God and love others as I walk into my work environment today.
I mean, I think it's just that idea of setting your mind on the things of Christ and the things above and realizing, I mean, just think about what God's sovereignty does in this. Like whatever situation you're walking into, God is completely sovereign over it. He has promised to work all of those circumstances and things for your good. He turns all things that are evil and he redeems them and works them to his good pleasure and his good purposes. He is a good father who only gives good gifts to his children. I think just hanging on to those things. And then I think it's again, why James can say, count it all joy. When you meet trials of various kinds, there's this anticipation. It's not that you don't grieve. Joy isn't the opposite or the absence of grief, but there's a longing with eager anticipation to see God make good out of this, to see. Yeah. And that's where I've used this example before, but it's why like I actually get giddy when I go to a restaurant, if I'm ever able to go to a restaurant again. But if I go to a restaurant and they mess up my order and they mess up things, I get giddy about it because I've seen God so often do those things that I'm waiting like a kid saying like do it, like I want to see what you're going to do with this, like this is going to be a great opportunity. Now I don't respond that way in everything else in my life. There are areas of my life that where I become distracted and I'm more fixated on my circumstances than I am on what God is doing in the midst of those circumstances. And so if you're more fixated on the way your boss treats you than you are on the platform that God is building for you and what God is going to do in the midst of that, both in your heart as he releases, maybe in that situation, he's releasing you from the sin of people pleasing. Like maybe it's hard for you that you want to please your boss so much that's where that root is coming, and that God is sanctifying that out of you and letting you see what it's like to serve people who don't give you that, you know, affirmation or that, you know, encouragement. Maybe he's building a platform for you to continue to respond in kindness and to repay evil with good, so that when the moment comes that this person's eyes are open to the truth of the gospel, that your life and your interactions are a testimony to that. There's just so many things that he could be doing in that moment. And when we spend most of our time grumbling about the circumstances, we just completely miss all the glory of the things that he's doing.
Man, you said so much good stuff in that. Working backwards, that idea of if I'm grumbling, I am blind to what God is doing. I am incapable of seeing what God is actually doing in this circumstance if I'm grumbling. I think that's so important. I love that you brought that up. It's so easy to forget. How often in my life have I found myself frustrated that I'm having difficulty seeing what God is doing in a circumstance and how he's working in that. And it's because I'm spending so much time complaining about that circumstance. How could I possibly see what is beautiful in it? I can only see what is negative, what is wrong. And so I miss all that God is doing in that thing. I love that. And I love that you brought that back to James, because as you just laid out all of those possible things that God is doing, that you're absolutely right. Whatever circumstance I'm going into, no matter how good or bad, he is over that, and he is working in that, and he is wanting to accomplish something in and through me in that. And so what I just heard you say is, best case scenario, he uses my faithful response in that to literally transform another person's eternity. And worst case scenario, he is using that to make me perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. That feels pretty positive. Like, and just to give context to that James verse, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Like, that worst case scenario, that is what my Heavenly Father is trying to accomplish in me through that scenario, and it only gets better from there.
And that is what he's doing. You know, he's not just attempting, it's what he's promised to do in us. And this is the way he works. And what I'm amazed by is how kind and gracious and patient our Father is, that he doesn't do it all at once. Like, most of my day, most of my day is not trials. It's, you know, trials kind of eke into my day, and they in my mind, they can become overbearing. But most of my day isn't that. Like, I'm still breathing. I'm still, like, I'm able to walk around. There's all these different things, like a million mercies and kindness and grace that God gives us. And then he does this like a coach that makes kids run, you know, in practice or whatever. Like, it's for our good. And so we need to be reminded of that. Another passage that came to my mind was in 2 Corinthians 6. Paul says, we are treated as imposters, yet are true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as punished and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich, as having nothing yet possessing everything. And that sorrowful yet always rejoicing gets kind of pulled out of that, but it's this situation that it's actually in being made poor that you're made rich, as having nothing you end up possessing everything. Like, there is this this tension, and I think that sorrowful yet always rejoicing is the way we should, that's the way we function as Christians, because we see the brokenness in the world, the way that things weren't meant to be, but also rejoicing in that they won't always remain this way, and that in Christ we can live in that identity now. And so I don't have to go into a situation and endure a difficult circumstance thinking with my only joy and hope saying, well, someday this won't exist anymore. I can actually experience the joy of that now as he is perfecting my faith and shaping me to be able to worship him and love others the way he's called me to.
Mm. I love that. And living and acting in this world, not fixated on all that is broken in it, but on the good news that Christ is redeeming it and is adopting sinners out of it and accomplishing his glorious ends. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, and we should acknowledge that it's hard, right? Like, this isn't easy. This isn't something that, like, I don't know anyone who, you know, that when I said that I get giddy about that in the restaurant, you're talking about one specific situation that doesn't even happen very often right now.
Right.
It's just little piece by piece from one degree of glory to another. And so if you're sitting there and you're thinking, man, this feels so overwhelming, I don't know how I could ever walk into work like that. Well, just little pieces at a time.
Yeah.
Just be faithful and obedient just in one interaction, in one place, in one, just be mindful. First, I mean, just be mindful of when maybe your grief has turned into grumbling. And that you're no longer just sad over the brokenness, but that you're resentful that God has you in the midst of that. And then realizing, kind of turning that to say, no, this is an opportunity. He's placed me here for a reason, not for my harm, but actually for my good. And like you said, he's forming me, and he's also setting me up as a testimony to his grace to a lost and hurting world. And you know, it's just little by little, day by day. And if you need help in that, man, we love to help people think through that and walk through that. And you're not going to find us being dismissive of, like, well, that situation's not that bad or whatever. That's not our posture. But our job is to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. And the work of the ministry is declaring and demonstrating the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so we want to help you. We want to help you do that and help you figure that out and pray with you and encourage you along the way.
Amen to that. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We're glad that you tuned in. And again, as Jay said, if you need help, if you have questions, if you have any follow-up thoughts on either a Sunday sermon or one of these podcasts, we would love to hear from you and either engage you personally, or if you just want to throw something out for a topic for a future podcast, we love to hear those as well. So thank you for listening. We love you, church. Grace and peace to you from God our Father.